Hello there, and welcome to episode number 125 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. All right, so the vibes in Blue Jays land right now, they're not good. They're not great. You know, it's never nice. It's never a nice feeling when one of your division rivals comes into your own ballpark and wins 3 out of 4 games against you. That leaves a bit of a sour taste in your mouth, right? And you know what? It should. The product of baseball that the Blue Jays put on display against Baltimore over this series, it wasn't good. And it didn't help either that smacked right dab in the middle of this series fell the trade deadline. And even worse, the night before the trade deadline, Bo Bichette goes down with a very scary non-contact injury to his right knee, which, if I'm being honest, I thought was going to be far more serious, and I think pretty much everyone was in this same boat, thinking that Bo Bichette just suffered a potential season-ending injury right there. And had that happened, the Blue Jays season would be in shambles right now, because Bo Bichette, as we all know, has been their best player all season. Now, Kevin Gausman's in that same conversation, but at least from the position player side, no one has been better, no one has been more valuable to this team than Bo Bichette. So to possibly lose him for the rest of the season would have been essentially death. Thankfully, we're not in that situation. We don't know how severe or how long Bichette's going to be out for with that knee tendonitis that he is currently experiencing. But we know this, that he's going to be out for a minimum of 10 days now that he's on the injured list. And in the meantime, the Blue Jays are going to have to figure out some way to generate some offense, because subtracting Bichette from that lineup, as we've already seen over these few games, it's not going to be easy. And what's even more disappointing, more frustrating, is that the Blue Jays weren't able to add enough offense at the trade deadline. And to be fair, not a lot of bats moved at this year's trade deadline. It just wasn't stocked with high-impact bats that were available. There were certainly discussions around bats that didn't end up moving, like Teoscar Hernandez in Seattle, like Tyler O'Neill in St. Louis, Cody Bellinger even in Chicago. None of those guys moved. Instead, we saw the Tommy Pham's, the Yimer Candelario's, you know, like Carlos Santana, just like scraping the bottom of the barrel, really. Now, Tommy Pham was a guy the Blue Jays were tied to, they had a lot of interest in, but ultimately they just couldn't get that one done. There were several other teams in the mix, including the Minnesota Twins, the Philadelphia Phillies, and obviously the Arizona Diamondbacks, who ended up acquiring him for some reason, because apparently they just like to stockpile outfielders in the desert. So that didn't pan out, unfortunately, because Tommy Pham would have been a nice addition to this team, especially with his skills against left-handed pitching. But he is a rental, and ultimately the Blue Jays didn't end up going down that route. But they did add Paul DeJong, in another trade with the St. Louis Cardinals after already acquiring Yenesis Cabrera and Jordan Hicks. They dial up the Cardinals again after Bo Bichette goes down, and they bring in Paul DeJong, which I'm going to get into a bit later, but I really like that move for the Blue Jays. Not as a everyday player, obviously, but Paul DeJong is going to be an important addition to this team over these next 2 months. But the big work that the Blue Jays was on the pitching side, and it wasn't adding another starting pitcher, which I didn't think going into the deadline they were necessarily going to be able to acquire, just with where their starting rotation was at, with having six starting pitchers available to them now at the big league level. It just didn't make sense to add a starting pitcher unless you were able to option that arm down to AAA and give yourself another layer of depth. I would have liked to see them make that move, obviously, but again, it was very slim pickings out there on the trade market. So what did they do? They went out and shored up their bullpen even more. And that started with Yenesis Cabrera, which, you know, a week or so ahead of the deadline, it looked like a pretty nice under-the-radar type move. You add a second lefty to that bullpen, which you didn't necessarily need because you have so many right-handed pitchers, right-handed relievers who are effective against left-handed batters. So it wasn't a necessity the Blue Jays needed to go out and get a second lefty. But with how much work the bullpen has been through, how many innings their high-leverage relievers have had to log, namely a guy like Tim Mayza, it made a lot of sense to go out and basically acquire Cabrera for essentially nothing. All they had to give up was Sammy Hernandez, who's a teenage catcher that I believe was playing in the Dominican Summer League. So you're not really crying about the return that you gave up for him. And obviously, with what Cabrera has done since putting on a Blue Jays uniform, it's been a savvy move by the Blue Jays front office. You know, like, sure, Cabrera has had one blow-up outing of the six that he's played with the Blue Jays, but you minus that one outing that ironically fell on the trade deadline, where he was knocked around for 3 hits and 3 runs by the Orioles, he's been fantastic. Outside of that one outing, he hadn't allowed a single run and had only surrendered 2 hits in those 5 other appearances with the Blue Jays. And it's easy to see why they like him. He profiles perfectly in those windows against left-handed batters, where now on the season, after logging 6 appearances with the Blue Jays, left-handers are hitting below 200 against Cabrera this season, and he has 27 strikeouts against them as well. And they've made some subtle adjustments, the Blue Jays coaching staff, with Cabrera's pitch arsenal, particularly against left-handed batters, where he came into their organization having 5 pitches at his disposal, which, you know, for a reliever, you don't need 5 pitches. Sure, like, it's a luxury if all are elite, but that's not the case with Cabrera. So they've been able to trim that arsenal down a little bit here. Doesn't throw the changeup at all versus left-handed batters. And one of the key differences that the Blue Jays have made with him is that he's not throwing curveballs against lefties either, which is good, because on the season, he was using his curveball against left-handed batters at 11% of the time, despite left-handers hitting 333 against him. So that didn't make a ton of sense, when, especially when your slider against left-handed batters is generating a swing and miss over 50% of the time. When that's the case, and you throw in the mid to high 90s, you don't need a curveball against lefties. You don't. That slider and your four-seamer and sinker will work just fine. And that's exactly been the case for Cabrera since being acquired by the Blue Jays, where now he is a three-pitch pitcher against lefties, and he's been really effective with that sinker, four-seamer, and slider combo. So now the Blue Jays can use Cabrera in those windows against left-handed batters in the sixth and seventh, and even earlier in those innings, which not only gives them an effective lefty in those spots, but it also preserves Tim Mayza for the higher leverage situations. Not to mention, it takes a huge toll off Mayza's workload as well. And considering how much the Blue Jays have relied on their bullpen, especially the back end of it, you'll take that. So Cabrera, who, by the way, has a minor league option, so you have that flexibility there with him, and as well, he's not a free agent until after 2025. So sure, after this season, it could get a little tricky just with finding space for him on the roster, but you have multiple years of control with this lefty who, with a little bit of fine-tuning that the Blue Jays have done with him, has turned into a nice little weapon for them in those medium leverage situations. And then you go to the other reliever that the Blue Jays acquired, Jordan Hicks, who now is their, you know, quote-unquote closer, with Jordan Romano currently on the IL with that back tightness flare-up issue thing that's been off and on with him ever since the All-Star game. It's been very weird that it went away for a bit and then came back, and now hopefully with him being on the IL away from game activities for 2 weeks, hopefully that can clear everything up so this no longer is an issue, because the Blue Jays need Jordan Romano. That's plain and simple. And especially now that you have a guy like Jordan Hicks, who gets a ton of swing and miss. He has a fastball that averages in the tops of the majors. His fastball velocity is in the 100th percentile. This season, it's averaging, his sinker at least, is averaging 105. His four-seamer is averaging 101. And then, on top of that, he also has this nasty sweeper that is generating swing and miss at 57.4% of the time. And not to mention, too, we all know the Blue Jays' track record with developing changeups. Hicks' changeup this year hasn't been used all that much. He's only thrown it 2.3% of the time, mainly throwing it to left-handed batters, but it's got a whiff rate of 42.9%. And if the Blue Jays are able to maybe find a way to help it induce a little bit more vertical movement, it might be another weapon that he could use against righties and lefties. He doesn't really throw his traditional slider anymore, but if he's getting deep into counts and hitters are laying off his sweeper and he's struggling to locate his fastballs, which has been an issue for him at times in the past, maybe he goes to that changeup. If it, again, plays up a little bit more, the velocity gap would certainly be helpful, considering that it's 10 miles an hour slower than his four-seamer and almost about the same against his sinker. So Jordan Hicks, to me, was a fantastic, barn burner, jaw-dropping move. Like, I honestly didn't expect it, I didn't expect the Blue Jays to make such a bold move, especially for a reliever that is eligible to enter free agency after this season. But when you take into account the fact that Jordan Romano is going to miss this stretch of 17 games in 17 days, and with how much the Blue Jays have relied on their bullpen this season, it makes all the sense in the world to go get a guy like Jordan Hicks, especially when in the postseason, most of the time, the difference makers are your high leverage relievers. And now the Blue Jays feature a bullpen that is absolutely stocked to the rim with them. Now, fewer currently on the IL, which doesn't help things. However, when we get to September, or even possibly sooner than that, the Blue Jays may be in a situation where they have more relievers than spots available, where you'll have potentially, assuming everyone stays healthy down the stretch and comes back healthy down the stretch, you could be in a scenario where you have Jordan Romano, Jordan Hicks, Jordan Squared, if you will, Trevor Richards, who's currently on the IL with neck tightness, but that doesn't sound all that serious, so hopefully he comes back soon. Eric Swanson, Tim Mayza, Jimmy Garcia, you know, who's struggled a little bit, but for the most part this season he's been pretty steady, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here. Chad Green, Nate Pearson maybe, Cabrera, Jay Jackson has certainly forced himself into that conversation of, you know, would they consider carrying him on the postseason roster? I don't think they would. I think he'd be the odd man out, unfortunately, which would be a huge bummer considering not only what he's had to endure off the field with his family, but just how impactful he's been for the Blue Jays bullpen this season, throwing multiple innings for them and key spots. I think back to the Dodgers series where they're pitching an extra innings and he's going out and carving through Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Will Smith, and showing that emotion on the mound after he gets through that grind. Like, I love what Jay Jackson has brought to this team this year. It's been a huge surprise, and he's easily been one of the best minor league signings of the year. But that being said, with probably only 8 bullpen spots available, you would think they push one of their starters to a long man or a multi-inning reliever type role in the bullpen to give you a 9th guy down there. But I do think they only carry like 8 traditional relievers when we get to the postseason. But again, like, if injuries happen, Jay Jackson is certainly in the conversation. But even if they do arise, the Blue Jays have themselves covered, because even if you look beyond the major league roster, you have Hagen Danner down at AAA, who's having a very nice season. Zach Pop has been very iffy, and his numbers have not been good since he got optioned down there after his rehab assignment finished. But he's still a guy who's got really good stuff, that sinker, that slider. So if the Blue Jays are running thin for whatever reason, he would definitely be an option under their consideration. Yosfer Zulueta as well, down at AAA, hasn't had a good season, but, you know, he's an arm down there, right? And the Blue Jays, previously, in past seasons, after the deadline, the Blue Jays weren't in this spot where they had layers and layers and layers of depth in their bullpen and beyond. Now they are. Now we're in a spot where the Blue Jays may have the most talented and the deepest bullpen that they've had in the last, what, 10, 15 years? You know, you look back at the 2015 and 2016 runs, and the bullpen was in a fairly respectable spot, but it was nowhere near as good at this as this bullpen is right now, or at least will become once guys get a bit healthier and come back to the majors. So, again, I really like the Hicks move. The cost was pricey, right? Especially for a rental, or at least a potential rental, in Sam Reverse and Adam Klopfenstein. Two guys that arguably were among the top pitching prospect performers. That's probably a better way to say that. But they had flashed incredible stuff, incredible numbers, down at AA with New Hampshire, which, by the way, has been one of the more notable affiliates in the Blue Jays system this year in terms of talent. That's been eaten into a little bit here, obviously, given their departures. But when you have the opportunity to acquire an arm like Hicks in exchange for two prospects who were or who are Rule 5 eligible this winter, so they would have required spots on the 40-man roster, or else they would have been subject to the Rule 5 draft. And I don't know if the Blue Jays were willing to put both of them on the 40 at this point. Maybe Klopfenstein, given how great of a season he was having in AA and the fact that he was probably on the verge of being promoted to AAA, and maybe similar sentiment with Reverse as well. By the way, both guys are currently in AAA in the Cardinal system now, so that'll be interesting to monitor. But if we look back prior to this season too, both of those guys were essentially hovering around just working their way out of being considered top prospects. Really, that was the situation. And then they came into this season, both improved their stocks immensely. And ultimately, they put themselves in a position to be trade chips. And it hurts that the Blue Jays were already thin in terms of pitching prospects, especially with Ricky Tiedemann still recovering from that biceps injury. So, you know, that is certainly something that would give you pause. Or at least I'm sure it would have given the Blue Jays a bit of pause. But at the end of the day, they're in this to win a World Series. And no disrespect to Reverse or Klopfenstein, but in regards to the 2023 season, neither of those guys were going to help you this season. Hicks can. So, sure, you're mortgaging the future a little bit, but you also were in a spot where you needed to maximize the prime years of Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s professional careers. You also have Matt Chapman entering free agency after this year, very likely at least. Brandon Belt's on a one-year deal. Kevin Kiermaier's on a one-year deal. Whit Merrifield's mutual option is very likely going to get declined, considering it would come in at $18 million. George Springer isn't getting any younger. Jordan Romano's getting closer to 30 years old. Kevin Gausman's on a big deal. Jose Barrios is having a fantastic bounce-back season. You just signed Chris Bassett over the winter. Yusei Kikuchi is also having a good bounce-back season. Like, you had to go pretty much all in to maximize this current window. So, to me, I know it was a high return, but at the end of the day, we could be looking back on this, especially if the Blue Jays find a way to extend Jordan Hicks, and this could end up being a really good move. It could end up being a win-win deal for both teams. You know, like the Cardinals were in a position where they desperately needed starting pitching depth. And now they have it following the deals that they made, particularly one with the Blue Jays. You know, neither Roberce or Klofenstein probably project to be anything more than middle to back end starters, but obviously that would have given the Blue Jays more depth in future seasons. But again, we come back around to Hicks, who can help them right now at the back end of their bullpen. So I certainly don't have an issue with giving up both of those prospects for a guy like Hicks. And then as well, the Paul DeJong deal. it was a nice first step in terms of upgrading the position player group, where you know, the Blue Jays certainly had not a obvious hole to fill by any means, but there was no question that they needed to make some upgrades, and especially with Bo Bichette going down due to injury. Paul DeJong will absolutely fill in nicely at shortstop, at least defensively. He's been one of the best defensive shortstops in the major league essentially since 2019. For his career, DeJong, he's been a plus 41 defensive run save defender. He's also got a plus 3 outs above average. This season, his outs above average is in the 97th percentile. So I have no issues or no worries with what he's going to be able to provide the Blue Jays on the infield. But there's no replacing Bo Bichette. That's pretty obvious. On defense, sure, DeJong may actually be an improvement for the Blue Jays, but in terms of what he's going to be able to provide the team offensively, it's not going to be anywhere near close to Bo Bichette's level. And that's no dig against DeJong. That's just not who he is. He has some power in his bat. He's a former 30 home run hitter. But he's not going to generate walks. He's going to strike out. He's not going to hit for contact. He's not really going to get on base, again, unless it's through an extra base hit or hitting a ball over the fence. He's got 13 home runs this season. That ties him with George Springer for fourth on the team in home runs, which is kind of crazy. But that's how few home runs the Blue Jays have been able to hit this season. But he does hit lefties well. He hasn't been able to do it a ton historically, but this is also a guy who was sent to the minors last season. So offensive track records aren't really his thing, but he's been able to turn things around for his career in 2023, where now it is a small sample size, mind you. It's only 64 at-bats, 76 plate appearances, but in those situations against left-handed pitching, he's slashing 266, 368, 457, with a 129 weighted runs created plus score. He's got an 11.8% walk rate to a 28.9% strikeout rate. So for a team that has struggled mightily against left-handed pitching, particularly in the bottom third of the batting order, DeJong should be able to help the Blue Jays in that regard. But again, he's not a guy who hits balls hard. He really just barrels up mistakes. He strikes out a lot. He swings and misses a lot. He chases outside the strike zone. He hits a fair bit of his batted balls on the ground. He is a pretty reliable fly ball hitter. But again, when you're not hitting the balls hard, they're not really going to go anywhere, right? So as a platoon hitter, DeJong will probably provide some value for the Blue Jays in those right-on-left matchups. But unfortunately, with Bichette injured, they don't have the luxury of bringing him off the bench against a left-handed reliever or giving him starts versus left-handed starters. For now, he's their everyday shortstop until Bo Bichette returns. But when he does, when Bichette does return, then we're going to be in a situation where the Blue Jays will have the flexibility to have Bichette at short, likely move DeJong over to second base, even though that's not a position he spent all that much time at in his career. He's played the position just 21 games where he's logged 165 innings. But given how valuable his glove has been for his career, I don't see why he can't be trusted to apply that same level of defense on the other side of the diamond. Especially when you can put Whit Merrifield in left field in those situations and not have to go to Santiago Espinal as much with a lefty on the mound. Because unlike last season, Espinal has not been effective against left-handed pitching. Frankly, he hasn't been effective, period, both offensively and defensively for this team. And despite all that, he continues to get reps because, well, they don't really have many other options on the bench. So, once we get to that point where Bichette's back, we'll probably see less of Espinal and more of DeJong playing second base, especially when there's a lefty on the mound. But we're probably looking at a scenario two here, especially with Bo Bichette out, where the Blue Jays could tap into that group of infielders that's currently raking down at AAA Buffalo. And that includes Davis Schneider, Spencer Horwitz, Addison Barger, probably not Aurelvis Martinez because he barely has been there. And considering that he's still in his early 20s, I probably want him to finish this season in AAA and then maybe have the discussion of when he could make his major league debut next season. But for now, I think since the Blue Jays weren't able to augment that 26th man spot on their roster externally, they'll likely explore the scenario of bringing one of those guys up and giving them some reps, probably at second base, while Bichette's out. It is possible, too, that we could see somebody like Davis Schneider come up with the team this weekend in Boston. And it is worth noting that Schneider wasn't in Buffalo's starting lineup on Thursday. So, could we see him join the team in Boston? Maybe. It's very possible. There's certainly some rumblings out there that that could be a possibility. But they would have to add him to the 40-man roster beforehand before they could add him to the active roster. But that could be fairly easily done. You could DFA Ernie Clement, who, like he's a veteran infielder. Even if you lose him on waivers, you're probably not all that concerned because you're handing over playing time to your youth. And like we just saw with the Baltimore Orioles, youth can have a pretty big impact if you give them the opportunity to do so and you don't just play them once a week. So now is probably the best time to give somebody a chance, right? Now that you have the opportunities available on the infield with Bichette out, why not give Davis Schneider an extended run, who, by the way, is Rule 5 eligible this winter? So you could do some off-season pre-work by adding him to the 40-man roster and then not having to worry about creating space for him on the 40 after this season. And you'd actually have some sort of look at what he could possibly do for you at the Major League roster. And I think it's more likely that a guy like Schneider would come up in this weekend series against the Red Sox, because you're going to see a lefty in James Paxton on the mound in game one. And considering that both Spencer Horwitz and Addison Barger hit from the left side, Davis Schneider probably is the more likelier one to get called up. I know his numbers against left-handed pitching down in the minors aren't, you know, eye-popping, but when your alternative option is either Espinal or putting Marshall or Kiermaier, having that pair both in the lineup against the lefty, when those are your two alternatives, yeah, I'm thinking there's a better chance of success going with Davis Schneider than going with any of those other outcomes. So we'll see what happens there, but I think at the end of the day, we're going to see some of their top we're going to see at least one of their top prospects come up here and make their debut and see what they can do, because this offense needs a spark, frankly. Like, they were held in check essentially all four games against Baltimore. They looked incredibly flat and vulnerable against Jack Flaherty, who's not having a good season, by the way. His ERA heading into Thursday's game was north of 4. He's not the same Jack Flaherty that he was before all the injuries set in. And yet, at one point, he retired 15 straight Blue Jays hitters. So, a spark is needed on this roster. And I don't know if that can be... I don't know if one hitter can be responsible for that, especially somebody who hasn't even played the majors yet, likely, if it's not Horwitz. And that'd be a lot of pressure putting on a guy like Barger or Schneider. But still, you gotta make some sort of change, because you can only change the lineup up so many times, right? And when you're already without your best hitter, you just need some life. And with Davis Schneider leading the team in home runs in 21 and OPS, which is almost hovering around 1,000, I think it's probably worth a look. Like, why not, right? If you have the at-bats available, why not see what he can do? If he helps you win a game, awesome. If he doesn't, not the end of the world either. But you might as well try it at this point. So... again, I have a strong feeling that we're probably going to see at some point, if it's not in the opener, we're eventually going to see one of those guys from that core of infielders at AAA Buffalo come up and earn some reps with the Blue Jays. And even if they do, though, the rest of the group has to be better. Right? Again, it can't come down to just one guy who hasn't played in the majors yet. The rest of the players have to be better, especially in spite of Bichette's injury, right? The Blue Jays need way more out of Matt Chapman and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And obviously George Springer, too, who got the monkey off his back, snapping his 0-for-35 slump the other night. Which tied a franchise record, by the way. But they can't afford to continue this route. At least, if they want to have a meaningful playoff run, they need to figure this out. And we've talked about the runners in scoring position issues all year, and how they're doing all the right things, or at least mostly, right? posting good batting average, on base percentage, slugging, doing pretty well weighted runs created plus as well in terms of league rankings. And given those, that it will eventually turn and they will start, you know, producing in those run scoring opportunities. But it's early August now. Like, we can't just keep waiting for that to turn. There needs to be some sort of change occurring, and it's probably not going to come in the way of firings, I don't think, at this point. It would be a little foolish to do it this late in the season. So if turning to youth in combination with some better quality at-bats from your key guys, especially when it comes to your swing decisions, because what we saw in that series against Baltimore, that was pitiful. The swing decisions that occurred with Chapman and Vlad and Springer, etc., wasn't good enough. That needs to be better. You can't continue to swing at pitchers' pitches and hitters' counts, and then also put up just horrible at bats. I tried to figure out a better way to say it, but they're just lifeless at bats some of these times, where you're going down so easy. You're so easy to pitch against, where they pepper high fastballs to right-handers and then dot those breaking balls low and away, and you offer at both. Or sometimes you watch all of them go by, if you're Matt Chapman at least. So this team needs to become a lot harder to pitch against. And it needs to happen now, because that Baltimore series was without question the biggest series of the season, and the Blue Jays fell flat on their faces. And the Red Sox are not even trying to get into the playoff picture. They did absolutely nothing to improve their team at the deadline. Nothing. And yet, they're just a few games back of the Blue Jays for the final wildcard seed in the American League. You wouldn't have guessed it if you had just looked at what they did at the trade deadline. And yet, they're right there. They're right there. They're nipping at the Blue Jays' heels. And their roster is nowhere near as talented as the Blue Jays. Not even close. So this needs to be some sort of, I don't like calling series statement series in August. That's just silly. But they need to put up some sort of answer. They need to show some sort of life offensively and take some of the burden off their pitching staff, because they've had to carry the load all season pretty much. That needs to change over these final 2 months, because if it doesn't, you're going to continue to see not only these injuries pop up, but you're going to see struggles start to come up, like we started to see before around the All-Star break, because guys were pitching on fumes for the most part. So if you can't start giving them more run support, those types of things are going to continue to happen. I hope they don't, but that's just reality. So hopefully things improve. The Blue Jays don't currently have a win against the Red Sox this season, so, you know, it would certainly be nice to get into the win column against James Paxton in the opener and set a good tone for that series. But at the end of the day, the Blue Jays need to be able to score runs, especially when you have Alek Manoah on the mound in game one, who is going to be facing a lot of good left-handed hitters in the Red Sox lineup. So if the Blue Jays can get him some run support, maybe he can pitch a little bit more freely and find some success at Fenway Park on Friday. So we'll see what happens. But that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.